This is HPC Wire Soundbite, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry. With Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360 Research. And now, here are your hosts, Michael Feldman and Addison Snell.
There's a new number one on the top 500 list. Justin Ratner teases us with Larrabee. And look who's announcing new supercomputers. It's Cray and SGI. Stay dry. It's a special SC09 edition of HPC Wire Soundbite on Tuesday, November 19th, 2009. I'm Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360 Research, joined in Portland by my co-host, Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire. Michael, is it raining where you are?
Well, I'm inside right now, so it's not raining right this second. But yeah, it's not San Diego, I can tell you that.
Well, welcome to Portland, Michael. It's always good to see you when we get to do these live in person. You having a good day today at the show? These are always big for us. Have you been pretty busy?
Oh, I've been packed. I've been talking to different people, and of course, all the news is coming out. I can't even keep up with it, but there's a lot of new stuff, and you just kind of keyed it up. But let's jump right into it. You talked about the top 500. We saw a little bit of a shakeup there, a big shakeup at the top, because IBM had been up there for so long. Finally, Cray got the number one spot with their Jaguar supercomputer that's at the Oak Ridge National Lab, and they got a 1.76 petaflop LINPACK, and that beat Roadrunner by a wide margin, which actually got knocked down a little bit because of some reconfiguration they did. So that's still sitting at about 1.04 petaflop. So it wasn't even close. So I think the reign of IBM is over finally, and Cray is on top. I think this is the first time that Cray has actually been the number one computer on list. That's according to the top 500 list. That's what they were saying, and which sort of amazed me. I have been following this for 16 years, but I was surprised to hear that. And you know, it's great. I mean, they deserve it. They're the supercomputing icon for all these years, and you know, now they're on the top of the list after 16 years of this.
And I saw Pete Ungaro briefly and congratulated him on the number one spot. I've been in so many meetings today that I feel like I'm still catching up to a lot of the news, and I've been finding out from you how a lot of the top 500 shakes out. But I understand Cray isn't only at number one either. They're up there a couple of times.
Right, they got the number three spot with Kraken, their XT5 at University of Tennessee, which is, of course, you know, right next door to Oak Ridge. That came in at 831 teraflops. That was just under Roadrunner and just edged out Eugene Julek. And then number five was that new Chinese computer we talked about, I think, a couple weeks ago that went into the National Defense Center there. That came in at 563, I think the same number that they originally announced, so basically half a petaflop. And I think that's the highest the supercomputer from China has ever been on the list. So that was a big win for them, and they got a lot of prominence. And that was the AMD GPU plus Intel CPU machine. So that was sort of an interesting thing going on.
Well, yeah, we had conjectured about that machine, the Tianhe machine, when we were talking about it, and a half a teraflop and how high that would be on the list. We were putting it somewhere around the middle of the top 10, and there it is.
Yep.
Very interesting to see a machine that high in China. Any other surprises for you on the list?
Not too many. In the top 10, everybody else just kind of got shaken up. There's a new one at number 10, which is Sandia National Laboratories Sunblade, which is a new system called Red Sky, and that made it at 423 teraflops, and that was the bottom of the top 10. So that was the only new system. The others just kind of got shuffled around as people enhanced their own systems. So everybody kind of moved down a little bit. And of course, at the very bottom of the list, that moves up, and that's now a 20 teraflop entry fee just to get onto the list. So that's
Wow. That's
up from three teraflops since just 6 months ago.
Well, I'm remembering when we had the first teraflop systems on the list. It doesn't seem like that long ago, but then I was thinking we were just in Portland a couple of years ago, and it turns out it's been longer than that.
Yeah, that was what? That was 10 years ago, right? Something like that?
Exactly. It was probably around the time we were doing a teraflop. I'd have to go back and check, but it's about the same time frame. So
right. Things
keep flying by, but it's astonishing the advancements that get made. And there were a couple of trends that I'd been reading about a little bit this afternoon on the list. It seems like not only did Intel continue to dominate the list, which maybe isn't news, but InfiniBand didn't just hold its position. It grew its position on the list.
Right. They came up a little bit, even from 6 months ago. They came up about, I think, 6%. They've now got 181 or 182 systems on the top 500. So they now represent well over a third of that list. And then the others, of course, mostly Ethernet. But I think the interesting thing is how they're distributed, because their top 500, or the top 100, 200, 300, they're the most used interconnect. And then you get to the bottom half of the list, it's like, is where Ethernet starts to dominate again. But at the top, it's very InfiniBand dominated. I think they have 63% top 100. So they're definitely establishing themselves as the high-end interconnect.
Yeah, I've been asked twice this week by people who wanted to know whether we thought InfiniBand stood any chance against the onslaught of the dominance of 10 gigabit Ethernet. And our opinion is that that's backwards thinking, that InfiniBand has been dominating in system interconnects for an HPC, and it seems to be continuing that lead and expanding it, that Ethernet is continuing to lag as a system interconnect for supercomputing.
Right, and I think at least the InfiniBand vendors would tell you that a lot of those systems on the top 500 list are sort of supercomputers in name only. In other words, a lot of the Ethernet systems, the gigabit Ethernet systems, are just something they put together to make a Limpack run, but they're not necessarily being used for HPC type workloads, or if they are, they're sort of very loosely coupled workloads. So they're not in the same application realm in that sense that some of these top systems are the InfiniBand latency performance.
Well, talking for a second about hearkening back to earlier times in supercomputing, I had another little bit of deja vu when I looked at who was releasing announcements of new supercomputers at the show. And we had two significant announcements of new platforms, and one was from Cray and one was from SGI. I'm starting to wonder what year it is.
Yeah, these guys, right, the big supercomputer vendors of yesteryear, they put the big announcements up. I mean, they do some of this every year, but I think SGI hasn't had a really big announcement at the show for quite a few years.
Well, talk to me first about the Cray XT6.
Okay, so I got a little bit of information about it. It's basically, they're using the next generation AMD processors, so it's going to be next year's 8 and 12 core Opterons that are coming with the new G34 socket. So in a sense, it sort of cuts off the socket compatibility upgrade path they've been on for so long, because they're going on to a new socket, but now they're expanding into this, more functional technology platform with the new Magna cores, Opterons, 8 and 12 cores, and they're going to start making those available in 2010. So that's right around the corner, and I think they've lined up a couple of customers already, so we're going to see those deployed and in operation. It'll be interesting to see what kinds of applications are starting to run on those and how they perform. But the upgrade path is going to be different now. So if you have an XT5 or an XT4, you're going to need new blades in your chassis instead of just plug-ins. But once they're on this new socket, then they can go up from there and do plug-in replacements of follow-on AMD processors.
So we got Cray at the low end with their new workstation products. We got Cray at the high end with the XT6, and we got Cray at the top of the top 500 list. So they've already been pretty busy. Let's go over to SGI for a second and talk about Ultraviolet.
Right. They announced this at the show on Monday, and they've got some Ultraviolet hardware out there that I happened to take a look at today. This is their new shared memory machine, and this is from Project Ultraviolet, which was announced almost 6 years ago today as their follow-on architecture. And in those 6 years, it's gone through a lot of iterations. So it's not quite the system that was envisioned back at SCO3, but it did fulfill some of the promises. It is a shared memory machine that can scale up to the petascale level. And what they've got is basically this mid-range version of shared memory. So they've got two versions of the Altix UV. They've got the 100 series and the 1000 series. And the 100 series is for mid-range, and it stops at a much lower number of socket cores and gigabytes, but the top of the line goes up to 256 cores and up to 16 gigabytes, and that's shared memory, one system image. And in fact, you can actually, if you want to put more than one system image together, you can actually concatenate those together and create a multi-system image petascale computer with global shared memory. So that's their top-of-the-line supercomputer. But like I said, they've got two versions of it. But it's basically their new shared memory system. And it's Nehalem EX. It's not Itanium. And this is what they've been promising. And they're using the new Nehalem EX chips, which are coming out next year. And shortly after Intel releases those, the Altus UV systems will go to market.
Well, you're right that the ultraviolet goes back a long time. I remember when I was at SGI trying to put together the announcements around ultraviolet, and it goes back before 2003 for those of us who were inside the company. So to see a product, any product called ultraviolet, coming out, it's nice. I think the big news is, regardless of whatever the final implementation was, they're going on to a new generation of NumaLink. They've upgraded the custom system fabric. So this is truly a next generational system bandwidth thing. And then furthermore, the SGI is putting its flag firmly in the ground and saying we're going to still dominate with shared memory systems, and we think there's a role for these in the market. I mean, what do you think? Shared memory, do people still care? Are we going to find people who want to go do this?
I think shared memory is very important. I think there are applications out there that want lots of memory. I think maybe where the model breaks down a little bit is there's not that many applications out there that are going beyond 32 or 64 cores or processors, I should say, sockets, simply because of the difficulty of doing that level of task parallelism. This system can do MPI as well. They've got an MPI accelerator Sure. built into that hub chip, so they're expecting a lot of big memory MPI programs to be hosted on those machines, taking advantage of the fact that you've got a unified memory address space and taking advantage of, like you said, the performance NumaLink 5 technology to do, these legacy codes that are written in MPI. But, I don't know if they'll get to applications that are running 256 sockets in a task parallel way, like OpenMP or something. So, yes, memory, global memory is a big deal. I'm not sure that level of task parallelism for the 256 socket, the maximum, I don't know if people will ever get there, and I shouldn't say ever, we'll get there in the near term and use that at full capacity. But certainly the 16 terabytes of global memory they can get on the big machine under one system image, I think that's going to be a very important capability. And I think the real question is, are these other virtual SMP machines that can virtualize either CPUs and memory or just memory come in and sort of take some of that share away? Because if the performance is halfway decent, you have a virtual memory machine that you don't need the hardware for or more limited hardware, then the SGI Altix UV will be competing against those. And there's more and more of those technologies, those virtual SMP technologies around.
Yeah, you've made some interesting points here, Michael. I think there is a role for shared memory systems here, but we're not in the same market dynamic as we were the last time SGI was pushing shared memory systems, trying to fight the transition to MPI. People have MPI.
Right.
There are a couple of questions of, one, how well does the MPI run in shared memory, and two, can you find people who are willing to take a step back in time, although it might be forward in performance, right, and take the MPI layers back out of their codes and go back to shared memory? And what would that take in order to get someone to do that? It's an interesting question.
Yeah, and I don't think SGI expects a lot of that to go on. I think they've put a lot of technology into this product to make sure that people can run MPI on these platforms in a very efficient way and get great performance, get better performance than a cluster, just simply because they've got an architecture that lends itself to very fast, basically node-to-node communication. So, and we'll take advantage of a lot of the shared memory technology. So I think they're expecting most of the applications running on the shared memory machines to be MPI program applications.
These announcements weren't the only news from the show today. We had Justin Ratner from Intel gave a presentation this morning, and he had a couple of interesting things about his vision of the future of supercomputing.
Right. He had the opening address this morning. It was very interesting. And he was talking about the 3D web, but the way he prefaced that was he sort of introduced the HPC market as a business as being in sort of tough straits here. He characterized as not a healthy business. In fact, he used one of your Intersect 360 slides, and he put it up there showing server revenue that was, you know, going up after this recession dip at like a 3.6% compounded annual growth rate. And he said, well, that's basically flat. That's not a business model we like to see. It's too flat.
He did use our numbers to do that, which I'm delighted that he's looking at them. But the reason the compound annual growth rate was only 3.6% for the server portion of the market for traditional HPC for the next 5 years is because it's off so much in the first year of that forecast. We're expecting to see 2009 down about 11 or 12% from 2008. And then it spends the next 4 years recovering and eventually getting back to growth to where if you average it out over that time frame, it's a 3.6% compound growth rate. But what you're really looking at is a bad year followed by a recovery year followed by some good years, and it comes back around in time. It just takes some time to start taking that back. There is a little bit of a compounding factor where over the course of that forecast period, larger increasing percentages of people's budgets go to technologies outside the server, like, for example, storage and services get some higher portions. So those right. compound annual growth rates are a little higher than the server compound growth rate. But to look at it and say, well, it's only 3.6 for 5 years and therefore it's a flat market, I think maybe it doesn't look at the data quite closely enough.
Right. Well, this is Intel, of course, and they're most concerned about the server market because that's basically where they are. I mean, they do a little bit in storage, but I mean, his point was that, he doesn't see growth and they need growth. They need to feed that market. So they need the chips going into that market. They look at, 3%. That seems like a healthy market for a lot of industries, but for Intel, that's a flat market. So.
And that's with the first year being a recession year too. So really the HPC market as a whole is looking pretty good.
Yeah. In comparison to other parts of the IT market and other larger markets outside of IT, certainly it does. But his big thing, okay, so they're looking for the next killer app, or actually what he termed as they're looking for the next killer infrastructure that's going to drive HPC. So it's all about volume. Like, what's the next volume technology framework or platform that's going to do this? And so his answer was basically the 3D web, where you have this continuous simulation, you have multi-view 3D animation, and where you basically are able to do immersive and collaborative work on the web and bringing people together using this very compute-intensive and network-intensive technology. And the 3D web to him was basically you bring HPC technologies together for the compute and then the cloud computing technologies together for the network, and that's the 3D web. So during his speech, he went through a couple examples with one of them was an avatar. He was talking to a scientist, and they were doing an ecosystem simulation, and he was explaining it, and it looked like basically a Second Life type avatar. And then he brought on somebody from the apparel industry, talked about how the 3D web would help the apparel industry and being able to simulate clothes in real time and have people, actually have designers do it at first and use all this compute power to be able to design fashion. And then later consumers would come in the web and design them on their own. But this is a huge industry. She introduced it as a $1.7 trillion industry it's not computerized. It's just all done by hand. It's done like we did in 1950. And this kind of technology is very interesting. So she's done some work using an OpenSim platform that does some of this at a sort of first generation level, and they've been able to save a lot of money in design time and sampling costs, but she sees this is just the first part of it. And so that was just an example of where the 3D web is going to be used in industry, but a lot of industries that are like that, that are not computerized but would benefit from this 3D interactive real-time technology, can use this. So Ratner's thing was, okay, we need the infrastructure to do this, and it's basically going to come from cloud computing and HPC. And this is when he leapt into his Larrabee demo. So he actually had Larrabee there doing a few benchmarks, actually. He said this might be one of the technologies that's going to drive this 3D web technology, because as we know, it's
Let's talk about this for framing this for a second, because Intel has been very careful to publicly say about Larrabee only that that graphics chips are for graphics, right? And
right.
That there's no public statement that that they'd ever be used for anything else. So how did that fit into that context?
Well, I mean, it doesn't fit into that context all that well. Although visual computing, I would say, does fit into that context. But the way Justin Ratner was describing it, it was less so. So again, we're getting, and we've been getting this all along, we're getting mixed signals from Intel on how they see this technology. But yeah, I mean, as far as visual computing, which is what he was really demonstrating, or what he was talking about there, they fully intend, I think, for Larrabee to be part of that. But what he demonstrated was not a visual computing application. He was demoing the single precision matrix multiply algorithm, which was just one of our basic scientific algorithms that people in our industry use all the time.
Right.
And he got it up to like 800 gigaflops for his whatever version of silicon that was in that box that he was showing on stage. But yeah, the whole idea was here, technology like this was going to be the thing that would be driving the volume for Larrabee or something like it, and create the technology that HPC could use. But again, like you said, what are they talking about here? Larrabee is not an HPC thing, but...
Well, that's the question, is without saying so directly, is he making the direct implication that, yes, Larrabee is going to be used as GPU acceleration within the box?
Well, I mean, what he showed...
It sure sounds like he's saying that.
Yeah, but, right, but, and so what he actually...
yeah, but...
what he actually showed was... or what he talked about, and I'm not sure what was in the box, because it was in a box, but... What he talked about was a Xeon chip being accelerated by a Larrabee coprocessor. So you have a basically a server chip, and then use like the GPUs are used as an accelerator. Now, one interesting thing that he did talk about, and I don't think they have this implemented or anything at this point, but instead of talking across a PCI bus, eventually they can have something, they can use a common shared, what they call shared virtual memory. So instead of having the CPU and the graphics accelerator or the Larrabee accelerator talking across the bus, it actually can use shared memory with some sort of memory subsystem. So that was a little different than what we've seen in the GPU arena. But yeah, I mean, the way he was talking about it, it was like for HPC. Now, he didn't say it had all the HPC bells and whistles that, you know, we just saw with Fermi and GPU or anything like that, and we just saw single precision performance from that matrix multiply. But yeah, he was referencing it in a very HPC way, so that was interesting.
Well, let's think about some of the opening addresses we've had at Supercomputings recently. We've got Justin Ratner from Intel, we've had Microsoft, we've had Dell. You know, if I start looking at a collection of Dell, Intel, Microsoft, if I'm looking at that cynically, it sounds a lot like my laptop.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, is this part of a trend here that, you know, does this mean that these are really the technologies that are the driving force in HPC?
Well, I mean, even Justin Ratner talked about, you know, the driving force today are these trickle-up dynamics that you see. They're coming up from the volume market. So, and of course, we see that. We talk about it all the time. You know,
we do.
It's been going on for 10 years, the attack of the killer micros, and it's the way, you know, the HPC world is right now. So it's a trickle-up technology, and they're stuck with that model. I mean, and stuck in the sense that that's the way Intel and I think most of these other companies think about it, that it's going to come from a volume business, and it's going to trickle up from some application or set of applications that can be spread over a much larger market.
Well, Michael, we've got a lot more of supercomputing still to come. Is there anything else that you're looking forward to seeing that you haven't gotten around to yet? What are some of the things that are things you're looking forward to investigating over the next couple of days?
Well, there's just a lot of companies I want to talk to. There have been a lot of announcements over the past 2 days that I think we're going to cover next time, or at least cover some of them. I think there's been like 100 announcements, and we obviously.
And we touched on some of them today. I'll tell you one area I'd like to look more into is the status of PNFS as we start wrapping up 2009, going into 2010. You know, there's a BOF session going on now. There's another PNFS reception that's kind of a multi-vendor thing. We really ought to be heading into beta for that now and start looking at where PNFS is going to be going in 2010 in terms of actual adoption. We've been talking about this story developing for 2 years now, and now that we're here, we've kind of got luster in its own little bit of turmoil, so it's an important area to determine what the role of PNFS is going to be. That's one area I want to look into.
Yeah, I just was talking with Blue Arc today, and they're on a PNFS path themselves, and I think there's a number of vendors out there that are on. In fact, we're going to have an article towards the end of this our coverage here about the status of PNFS, and I think if everybody kind of just waits around until they might not see it until Saturday morning, since it'll be in our last issue Friday night. But yeah, that's a very important technology to us. It's not making big headlines. I don't think I've seen too much cross the wire as far as news, but under the radar, it's certainly things that all the storage vendors are looking at and are planning for next year.
You mentioned Blue Arc, and I'll just give a very quick shout out to James Rainey of Blue Arc, who had a very good reason for missing my meeting with him today. His wife gave birth to twins this morning, so I'll say congratulations to James and his wife, and I hope everyone's at home and doing fine, and I'll catch him at another meeting soon. But we've got a lot of supercomputing coming still, Michael, like we've been saying. Right. We did a preview show last Friday, and then we've got this one today. Thursday, we're going to have another program from Portland where we'll wrap up more of the product announcements from the show, and we'll also have Al Gore's keynote session to review. This is interesting, having a Thursday keynote. I think it's got a lot of the show staying busy all the way through Thursday with such a popular draw coming out. And then on Monday, we'll have our final post-show wrap-up, and that'll conclude our supercomputing coverage. We'll leave all four of these shows accessible on HPC Wire throughout the Thanksgiving holiday.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it all, and hopefully we can fit in as much news as we can, but there's lots of stuff, and then you basically laid it out. I mean, we got the other products, and there's a lot of them in Gore. That's going to be an interesting topic, and then the winners and losers, and right, they'll be online throughout next week and through the weekend. So if you happen to miss them, they'll still be there for quite a while. So
I always love getting the winners and losers at the end of the show, so I'll be looking forward to that. And in the meantime, if anyone's listening to our podcast during the week and there's something they really want us to cover, they should drop us a note.
Definitely.
That'll wrap it up for Tuesday in Portland, Michael. I'm sure you're off to a dinner reception, and so am I. This is the feast or famine that we have at Supercomputing that I wrote about last year, but always a pleasure. I love this show. I love everybody I get to see, and it's fun talking to you as well.
It's fun talking to you, Addison. I'm looking forward to Thursday.
Have a great show, Michael, and I'll talk to you again Thursday afternoon.
You've been listening to HPC Wire Soundbite with Michael Feldman and Addison Snell. Got a question or comment for Michael or Addison? Email soundbite@hpcwire.com. HPC Wire Soundbite is available every Friday afternoon from iTunes or at hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.